The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome into First Take. We're so excited to have you here with us. I'm a DC alum myself, guys, so very proud to see Howard University representing here on the show. My name is Charlie Arnold. We got these two guys in with us here today. Unfortunately, Stephen A. not here with us. He is an HBCU alum, but we got Max Kellerman. We got Ryan Clark, both of you looking ever so dapper today. So, guys, we have a lot to get to. We have a lot of quarterback talk in today's show. So what do you say we start with the guy who has led the Seattle Seahawks the past 9 seasons? And it's time to air some grievances. You know, there's only so many hits and sacks a guy can take, and it seems Russell Wilson has reached his limit. He's expressed his desire to be more involved in personnel decisions. Hint, hint, offensive line. His comments come on the heels of an NFL Network report that multiple teams have called the Seahawks about a possible trade for the 8-time Pro Bowler.
I definitely believe they're getting calls for sure. I didn't think that, anytime you're, a player that, you know, tries to produce every week and has done it for, you know, consistently, I think people are going to call for sure. And I think it's part of the process. I'm not sure if I'm available or not. That's a Seahawks question. But I think more than anything else is, I think at the end of the day, you want to win. You know, you play this game every day to wake up to win.
So, Ryan, do you think that Russell Wilson does deserve more personnel input?
You know what? This is one of those crazy things. I think that he should be a part of the conversation, but I don't believe the Seattle Seahawks owe him that. And I think that's where we're starting to get confused, you know, because you look at Deshaun Watson's situation. He said something very similar to Russell Wilson. I want to be involved in these conversations. I want to be involved in these things. And the big problem in Houston is Cal McNair said, okay, you will be. Okay, I will do these things. I will run these things by you. And then he didn't do it. So it was the lie there, not a situation where they just didn't want him involved. It was the fact that they said he could be and he wasn't. And so now you look at Russell Wilson's situation and you think to himself, okay, he's seeing some of these things going on outside of his organization. He's seeing some of these quarterbacks kind of take control of their careers and of their situation. And he's like, you know what? I'm not going to be that Russ anymore. There hasn't been a quarterback that has played this game that has been more concerned with their brand than Russell Wilson. There hasn't been a quarterback in this game that has made a career of saying nothing while saying the right things to continue to be seen in the light or perceived in the way that he wanted to. And so now all of a sudden, not only do you go on a Dan Patrick show, but you have a press conference. This was strategic by Russell Wilson. And what I love about Russell Wilson, what he said was they asked him, if he thought he was going to be traded or if he thought that there were calls for him. Did you know what he said? Charlie, you know this. Max know this. Y'all been in relationships. He basically said, you know what? The world knows or the NFL knows that I'm in a relationship with the Seattle Seahawks. But what they also know is I'm good looking. What they also know is I'm successful. What they also know is I'm talented. So if every now and then somebody slides in my DMs, that's going to happen. So that's what Russell Wilson feels right now. He's like, yeah, they want me, but right now I'm not answering the DMs, right? Right now I'm leaving everybody in the requested folder. But if y'all don't act right, if y'all don't give me a little input on who's coming to this team, if I don't get an opportunity to talk about the people I meet at the Pro Bowl or talk about the people that I see on film and maybe get some of them in here, then that's going to be an issue and I may want out then. If you don't start protecting me, then that's a problem. Because Russell Wilson's problem at the end is this. Russell Wilson is concerned with legacy, and later on he talks about that. He sees the Aaron Rodgers. He sees the Patrick Mahomes. He sees the Tom Brady. And you know what else he hears? That he's not in the conversation with them. Because he believes he's that type of player. He wants the Seattle Seahawks to let Russ cook. But if you watch the season progress, he turned back into Super Bowl Russ, and it became about run game, and it became about defense. He doesn't want that, and he feels the only way to get those things is to have input on who he plays with.
Well, they absolutely do deserve input. Russell Wilson does. And players of his stature do. Not by the letter of the law, but in reality. Because two things have happened. The first thing that's happened is the NFL and the NBA have sold the fan base on the pursuit of a championship. That's what's most important about it. Don't look at the money. Don't look at the team. Look at the pursuit of a championship. And the fans have bought it. We count rings. And by the way, you know who are fans? The players. They started out, most of them, as fans of the sport. They drank the Kool-Aid, same as the rest of us, Ryan, as you did, right? You're a champion. Who can ever take that away from you? And quarterbacks especially. Right. Why quarterbacks? Because once upon a time, the NFL was not about the players. It was about the teams and the brand. It was the NFL. The NBA marketed the personalities and the stars. And that's because one player in basketball, especially in the NBA, can influence the course of a season, the outcome of games, the ability to win a championship more than in any other sport. Well, certainly more than in football. It's not as interdependent. One player can do it. And that usually hasn't been the case in football. But what happened? And here's the other thing. The first thing is selling the pursuit of a championship. The players have bought in. The other thing is everyone likes offense. And so all the rules changes have favored the offense. And since running backs are only going to run but so fast, what they've favored is the quarterback. Because the quarterback can give you better return on your investment. They can throw for more yards, put up more points. And so every rule change favored the quarterback. And all the strategy favors quarterback. They are more important than ever before. So those two things. One, hey, it's all about the rings. And two, the quarterback has enormous influence over the fortunes of your team. Means, Ryan, as you pointed out, that certain quarterbacks, if they're superstars, have enormous leverage. So Deshaun Watson wants out. Aaron Rodgers, they kind of had to placate. Everyone saw what Tom Brady just did. He wasn't happy with Bill Belichick and six rings. Goes to Tampa, wins another ring. Oh, you're counting rings with us? Ryan, occasionally you'll find a Damian Lillard, who's younger than Russell Wilson, by the way, still. We'll see how the future plays out. Occasionally, there's a dude like Damian Lillard who's saying, no, I'm not going anywhere. I'm going to bring a championship here. But most other superstars, I think, at a certain point, say, wait a minute. You're not putting me in a good enough position to win. Either you do or I will seek greener pastures. So, Ryan, the reality is, forget about the letter of the law. They owe him input if they're on the level of Russell Wilson.
The other thing is this, though, Max. When I listen to Russell Wilson talk, right, when I listen to Russell Wilson talk, and obviously I didn't hear everything. I've listened to different snippets, you know, to prepare for the show. I listened to different things yesterday just because I was interested in seeing what he said. It wasn't a lot of team. This wasn't Go Hawks Russell Wilson. This wasn't I've signed the deal. I do the awkward thing in the bed with my wife and we say Go Hawks under the, like, it wasn't, right? This was Russell Wilson. This was my legacy. This wasn't everything ends in team. This was I'm tired of getting hit. Yeah, I'm tired of being tackled. I'm tired of the sacks. Yeah, I believe I should have input. Yeah, I believe people are calling for me. So let's not misconstrue this. Now, do I think Russell's a team guy? Absolutely. Do I think he's a great leader, great player, great man off the field? Absolutely. But this was the first glimpse into aged Russell Wilson. This was the first glimpse into daddy, father, husband Russell Wilson, that now the picture is bigger to me and the picture is about me. The picture is about how I'm seen, how I win. And yes, does he want to win a championship? Absolutely. Nobody plays that hard to not win championships. But I believe Russell wants to win championships a certain way. I believe Russell doesn't want to hear again that it was about the Legion of Boom and it was about the run game. He wants people to think they won because Russ got to cook. This is a different situation. And do they owe him a little bit? They owe him the discussion. But he's never going to make the decisions. If they want to placate him, kind of like you said, Aaron Rodgers, and let him talk, maybe so. But this is about Russell Wilson this time.
I hear what you're saying. That's not the way I see it, Ryan. The way I see it is this. The players now, certain select players, the superstars, Tom Brady, as I said, just did it. Even the Patriots of Belichick, not good enough. Where are my weapons? You know what? I'm going to Tampa. They're loaded with weapons. certain players are saying good
that's
enough
free
is
agency,
not good enough.
Max.
Good enough is not good because Seattle. But well, okay, fine. But the reality is they have leverage even during their contract. That's the reality, particularly as franchise quarterbacks. And we all know that in the collective bargaining process, the teams who operate a virtual monopoly, a de facto monopoly, it's not a level playing field or negotiating with the labor union. It's not, because the labor union really has no other option. So I hear, well, the letter of the law says the contract. Don't give me that. Let me know how it works in reality. But my point is this. Good enough is not good enough. And that goes for teams. Teams can look at a good quarterback, solid guy, and say, Jared Goff, you're not good enough. We need to do better than you. Yeah, we make the playoffs. Yeah, we've been to a Super Bowl. You made a couple Pro Bowls. We're trying to win the Super Bowl. See you later. And guys like Russell Wilson are flipping it around, as I said, because of the leverage they have due to the importance of a quarterback. And then because of the leverage they have due to that importance and their amazing performance. They have a lot of leverage. They're on the far end of the bell curve. They're better than the rest of them, right? Those guys can say, yeah, we get to the playoffs. Yes, I won a Super Bowl with you once upon a time. Yeah, we can win double digits. Just like good enough isn't good enough for the team, good enough isn't good enough for the players, for a select group of players anymore, and they're letting the teams know it.
Well, guys, I'm no NFL insider, but I was in Tampa this past weekend, and I heard enough to tell you that there are certainly teams who are sliding in the DMs for Russell Wilson. So which teams, I don't know exactly, but I did hear talk about that. So we'll leave it with that, and we will move on because, guys, this is something you talked about. Absolutely. Guys, he's in demand. Just like you said, Ryan, slide in those DMs. He knows his worth. All right, you guys got into this yesterday on First Take. Max, at least you did. The Cowboys, they released a hype video this week to pump up Cowboys Nation for the upcoming season. But there was one man nowhere to be seen that was the supposed future of the franchise, yet we have to mention unsigned Dak Prescott. So since then, Derek Eagleton, the senior director of media and programming for the Dallas Cowboys, tweeted this. Quote, this was simply an oversight that should have been caught and corrected by us. Anyone who's making it seem like Cowboys decision makers use social media videos to make statements doesn't understand or take the time to understand how it all works. Trust me, there's no story here. All right, Max, what do you think? Do you believe him when he says that there's no story here omitting Dak out of that hype video?
You ever see the Naked Gun? You guys are Charlie, Ryan, you ever see the Naked Gun with Leslie Nielsen?
Yeah.
Nothing to see here, please disperse. There's like a chalk outline of a body, then they got the megaphone. Yeah. Nothing to see here, please disperse. They got a chalk outline of Dak Prescott talking about nothing to see here, please disperse. I mean,
literally nothing to see
I was born on a day, but not yesterday. Ryan, hold up. The Dallas Cowboys, whether I like it or not, whether we all like it or not, because Ryan, I grew up a Steelers fan before I was a Giants fan, because when I was a kid, the Giants stunk, and that there were two out-of-market teams you could root for, either the Cowboys or the Steelers. Real football fans rooted for the Steelers, and if you didn't have a soul, you rooted for the Cowboys, right? But as a result of that, the Cowboys are the number one brand in the universe in football. Any level, any place, the Cowboys are the number one brand, whether we like it or not. And the number one brand in the universe in football has a franchise quarterback they've been unable to work out a long-term deal with. He didn't sign the one they offered. They haven't got him to a new one. He's coming back, and they don't include the quarterback in the hype video?
Right.
So, so the PR people come out. They're like, no, there's no story here. What are you, crazy? You crazy media people? You think there's this? Oh, okay, if you're going to say that the number one brand in football, not including their franchise quarterback in their hype video because they don't have him signed and he might not be with us, and Adam Schefter said the over-under on teams with new quarterbacks is 18 this season and he'll take the over? That there's a better than 50-50 chance that any team is going to have a new quarterback. If you think that's a story, okay, I didn't know that's what you meant by a story. As far as I'm concerned, there's no story here. Get all the way out of here.
Well,
Here's the thing, though, Max. They know it's a story. That's why you got to release a statement like that. Think about it. If it was a simple 32-second video, if it was just, oh, we're trying to hype the fans up, you don't come out then and say, oh, it was just an oversight, or there's nothing to see here, or we're not worrying about it. Because here's what I do know, Max, that when you have a relationship with somebody, if you care about them, what you do work to do is show them that you care. Right. It's not necessarily that we have to include him, because if we don't include him or if we exclude him, we now have these stories. No, you want to include him so you know you thought about him. Right. You want to include him so he understands how important he is to the organization. And at the least, you're intentional about knowing he's not in it. You know what I'm saying? Like, if we all sitting around in the office and I'm about to go out and get some coffee, if I'm ordering some coffee and we're going to work together today, you might not necessarily want coffee. And I ask, hey, Max, hey, Charlie, y'all want some coffee? Y'all be like, nah, RC, I'm good. But it's another thing if we all sitting in this room and then I have somebody come in and deliver me a blonde Americano and y'all like, well, dang, RC ain't even ask me if I want none. See, it's the point that now Dak Prescott has to sit on the outside and say, dang, they didn't even think about me. That this was an oversight, that Troy Aikman is in it, that Emmitt Smith is in it, that these special teams players are in it, but they didn't even think about me here. And I am convinced, because Tad Prescott tweeted something out, right? He tweeted the little emoji with the face like that. I'm convinced that Tad Prescott is Dak Prescott's burner account, like KD actually had a burner account. Tad Prescott says all the things that Dak Prescott cannot. Because you have to know, when Dak Prescott sees that video and he realizes he's not in it, it's just another tick, right? It's just another opportunity that they've overlooked me. It's another opportunity that they've devalued me. It's another opportunity that the Dallas Cowboys have shown me how unimportant I am to them. And that's a real thing.
But they didn't overlook him, Ryan, right?
In the age of...
They didn't overlook him.
It's
like, your analogy...
We talk about quarterbacks taking control.
You know what I think your analogy it's more like? You know what I think it's more like? It's more like,
what's up?
If you give your part, you give the person you're married to, or it's Valentine's Day, you get flowers for every
right.
single person except the person you're married to. Was that
right.
The
most
oversight?
Important one?
Or are you sending a
not
message?
Smart, right. Not smart.
Which one? It's because you don't think you're going to be married very long. The Cowboys know there's a good chance Dak Prescott's not their quarterback, so they didn't put him in the hype video. And then they, with a straight face, they come out and say there's no story? Come on, man. Like if that really is an oversight, that's the dumbest thing I can think of that you can do. They're not that stupid. That's intentional. They didn't include him because don't include a guy in a hype video coming into a season if they might not be there, right? I mean, what else could it be?
Hey, hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-time chimney sweepers, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish, but you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit directtv.com to sign up today. Claim based on the total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Thanks so much for listening to the First Take Pod. Have a fabulous day.
Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take Podcast. Have you ridden an electric bike yet? Well, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to more exploring time outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range for up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus, Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome. So you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting lectricebikes.com. That's L-E-C-T-R-I-C ebikes.com.
Guys, it wasn't more than a few weeks ago that the Nets were considered the instant favorites to win out the East, but now through 26 games, Brooklyn is only 14-12. They've fallen to 7-11 against teams below 500. Last night was the latest, losing 122-111 to the Pistons, in which KD did not play. Here's a frustrated Kyrie after the game.
I don't think that we go out every single day of our lives and sacrifice the time in order to be average at anything. And we look very average, you know, and we have the talent that the eye test presents that we should be dominating.
All right, airing out that dirty laundry, we now welcome in Big Perk. Max, what do you think the Nets' biggest flaw is right now?
Well, I've said in the past, and I've said until now, it's defense, but I want to take it a level deeper. The real issue with the Nets, and this has to do with the defense and the results and everything, is they have a thin roster. I mean, when you really look at what just happened, they came into the year, I didn't even think they needed James Harden to get out of the East. Then Dinwiddie got hurt. And what that meant was the way they addressed the fact that now they were short one of their playmakers was to trade two more of their best pieces, other than obviously KD and Kyrie, in order to get even more top-heavy, because James Harden will offset that. So they bring in James Harden. Now, they're an extremely top-heavy group. But if they're missing one of their pieces, which they were, KD, last night, they're really shorthanded because of the lack of depth on the roster. And what that means, it has, like, defensively, obviously they have work to do. But what the top heaviness of the roster means is you're really relying on those guys to take you there. This is a COVID year. They're not practicing. It's a brand new group. They're relying on the talent of the big three to overcome that, to overcome a lack of depth. And by the way, even defense, that's not just effort, it's communication. Hard to get that together when you're bringing a whole bunch of guys together and you can't practice like a normal season. Things are just different. So really what you're relying on, especially early in the season, is, look, the three of you guys are so talented. You're going to overcome for these shortcomings while we get the defense together, while we get used to each other, while maybe before the deadline we bring in a piece to play some defense, grab some defensive boards. Jeff Green is a useful player still, especially in, you know, as a four. As a five, when you're playing small ball, you're not going to play any defense. You're not going to stop people. You're not going to get rebounds. So with that thin roster, when they're missing KD, it's too much. Perk, since the Harden trade, they are the worst defensive team of all time. But they're able to win a lot because they're one of the best offensive teams of all time. Now you take your best player out, the offense isn't good enough to make up for the defensive shortcomings. The number one flaw is they're top heavy and thin.
Well, Max, look, I don't disagree with nothing you just said, but I'm gonna take it a step further. And they're right. They can't stop a nosebleed. Their defense is horrible. But you could put in all the schemes. You could watch all the film. It has to come within. Now, if we were talking about a group of young guys, then it would be a difference. Guys that have won level, guys that have won championships, guys that have won finals MVPs, guys like James Harden, a guy like James Harden who hasn't won a championship, but he's battle tested. He knows how to get to the finals. He knows what it takes to advance in the postseason. So when I look at it, I'm looking at the lack of accountability and watching the Nets, watching them blow coverage after coverage after coverage, time and time again, shows me that it's a lack of accountability in that locker room and people are not holding each other accountable. When I was on the Celtics, the first thing that happened is guys bought in defensively. Yeah, you had Ray Allen, Paul Pierce, and Kevin Garnett. You knew you were going to get buckets. But they bought in on the defensive side, and they also allowed Doc Rivers to hold them accountable. You could tell the teams that are well-coached and get held accountable. The Utah Jazz, the way that they're flying around, the way that they're
talking and switching. So are you saying Steve Nash is the issue?
I'm saying it's a lack of accountability, however you want to paint it. I'm not ducking or hiding. I'm telling you what's going on. When you look at a championship team and you look at these guys blowing defensive coverages and not giving the right effort, that goes to show me that somebody is not holding these guys accountable. Whether it's Steve Nash, whether it's Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, James Harden not holding each other accountable, doing film session or doing walkthrough, something is not right. And that's what I'm telling you, Max. We could talk about their defense, and I get it. That defense is horrible. But when you're on Betts, DeAndre Jordan, Jeff Green, all these veteran guys, it's not rocket science. Like, you can look, you can see what's going on once you see them blowing coverages.
One thing I'll say is Steve Nash is a rookie head coach who was not known for his defense, nor did he play on a team that was known for their defense, needless to say. And Mike D'Antoni, who's there as, you know, some experience on the bench, also obviously was not known for his defense. Way before I ever heard Stephen A. say that Jamie Foxx called him Antoni, no D, I was making that same joke perk on L.A. radio when D'Antoni was it. That's Mike Antoni, no D. I mean, so that, yes, like, that's part of it. But let me say something. Those Phoenix Suns teams without great defense made playoff runs every year. They got deep. And even right now, if you look at, like, I talk about their offensive efficiency versus their defensive efficiency. Worst ever versus almost best ever, right? But when you split the difference, they're actually in the middle of the pack. When you say, okay, add it all up, what's their point differential? I think it's 0.2 points or something like that, which puts them squarely in the middle, 15th in the NBA. And a team like that, you're expecting to win as much as they lose as much as they win. The difference here is they have three guys who can all play hero ball. As much as people say, oh, it's not about hero ball, we all know if you have three dudes who can all get their own shots at an historically elite level and hit them from anywhere at an historically elite level, those close games, you're going to win a lot of them. If you have three dudes like that, that's never really happened before on that level, you're going to win a lot of them. But if one of those dudes is missing, Perk, if one of them is missing, a lot of that, especially if it's your best guy, that firepower that you have to rely on, it ain't going to be there. And that's their top heavy and thin. You mentioned DeAndre Jordan and Jeff Green. DeAndre Jordan can give you some minutes, and Jeff Green can still play. That is true. But if you're relying on DeAndre Jordan and Jeff Green, you know, and even Joe Harris, who can shoot the lights out, every NBA team has guys like that. What NBA teams don't have are the big three. But big two ain't going to be enough.
Yeah, but Max, my point to you is that when you look at a team like the Los Angeles Lakers, and you look at Anthony Davis and LeBron James, they're two superstars, and you watch how they take pride in setting the tone defensively, and you hear about how they hold each other accountable and challenge each other on the defensive end. I'm looking at it, and I know that Frank Vogel is holding them accountable. When you used to watch the San Antonio Spurs and watch the great Greg Popovich meet Tim Duncan at half court, getting in his face about blowing the defensive, that's holding the guy accountable. When you used to watch the Boston Celtics and watch Doc Rivers meet Kevin Garnett at half court, giving him the business about blowing the defensive assignment, that's accountability, Max. And what I'm telling you is, I don't see that right now. So we could talk about, we know that their defense is horrible, but somebody got to hold them accountable. Because if they come out on the court making the same mistakes time and time again, then you have to address this issue. It's accountability.
Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. We all know breakfast is part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any, and you know what happens. You grab a cup of coffee, you skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, even waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Come on. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code FIRSTTAKE and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to gamble responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. This U.S. promotional offer not available in D.C., Mississippi, North Carolina, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 for New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. For West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. First bet offer for new customers only. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
In our ESPN draft expert, Todd McShay, releasing his first round mock draft following the completed season, he still has the Jags taking Trevor Lawrence with the number one overall pick. However, listen to this. Todd has the Jets taking BYU quarterback Zach Wilson at number two, and he also has two trades taking place with the Panthers, moving up to take North Dakota State quarterback Trey Lance at number three, and the Bears trading up to take Alabama quarterback Mac Jones with the 12th pick. All right, so now it is only right that we welcome in the master of the mock draft, Todd McShay, into the show. And Todd, I'm sure after you release this, your social media has been absolutely blowing up because you have four quarterbacks being taken in the top five picks and five quarterbacks being taken total in the top 12 picks. So how many of these quarterbacks do you really see as quality NFL starters?
Well, if you just look at it, Trevor Lawrence is kind of a one-in-a-decade type of quarterback prospect. And that's why Urban Meyer took the job at Jacksonville. And he's going to be the number one overall pick. After that, there's a little bit of a gap. But I think Zach Wilson from BYU belongs at that number two spot. Now, the Jets have to decide, are they going to move on with Sam Darnold or are they going to move him out of town? And if they move him out of town and get a trade, I think they stay at two and take Zach Wilson. If not, and they decide that Darnold's their guy moving forward after all the other dominoes fall, if you will, in terms of the veteran quarterbacks as we go through trades and free agency, then I think they stick at number two, or they wind up trading out of that spot, and they wind up getting a different player and additional picks. They already have two first-round picks this year, two first-round picks next year. So if Darnold's the guy, they move back and allow a team like maybe Carolina moving up from 8 to 2 to go get Zach Wilson. So I think Wilson is firmly cemented in my mind in that number two spot. After that, I think there is another gap, and that's where Trey Lance from North Dakota State comes in, and then also Justin Fields from Ohio State. They're very similar types of players. I like Lance slightly more than Fields because I think he processes things quickly. But both guys can extend. They're big, sturdy, durable, competitive guys who really can create and make plays as well. So I don't – listen, it's never happened in the common draft era where we've seen four quarterbacks go 1 through 4. So it may not happen this year. Don't bet on it. But what I'm trying to show here is the demand for quarterbacks and how teams could trade up to try to go get their guy once we figure out where Carson Wentz goes. What happens with Deshaun Watson? Does Dak Prescott leave Dallas? Does San Francisco move on from Jimmy Garoppolo? There are so many pieces in this puzzle to put together. But right now, those are the top four quarterbacks. And then Mac Jones from Alabama is slightly behind those guys as the fourth tier, if you will, in the first round of quarterbacks, the five quarterbacks that I have in this mock draft.
Well, if it happened this way, it would be astounding. And yet even the fact that it's in your mock draft, I think, says a lot, Todd. Every year, it seems, early on, the prognosticators and your forecast, how many quarterbacks will be taken. Maybe this guy is a day two guy. Maybe this guy. And every year, it seems, as the draft approaches, the quarterbacks are moving up. What I notice here on your list, it's not just the quarterbacks. Quarterback, 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 offensive tackle, wide receiver, wide receiver, wide receiver, wide receiver. Like, where are the defensive ends?
Yep.
And then corners. It's all about the passing game, it seems like. Is this? Do you expect this draft finally to be the draft where it's just in plain sight like that? Nothing but quarterbacks and wide receivers, and then the guys who have to cover the wide receivers, basically.
Yeah, Max, I mean, that's where the league has gone, right? I mean, we're playing more of a spread out game with, you have to have a quarterback. We all know that. And that's been the case for forever. But you have to have guys that can go make plays. And this year, there are three, in my opinion, that belong in the top 10. Ja'Marr Chase from LSU opted out this past season. Go back and study 2019 tape. He has the best traits. And by that, I mean size, speed, ability to go up and make contested catches of all these receivers. DeVonta Smith after Jaylen Waddle, his teammate, got injured, Devontae Smith stepped up and had arguably the best wide receiver year that we've ever seen in college football. And I always compare him to Marvin Harrison. Skinny legs, doesn't look the part of the number one, but he just knows how to get open. He finds a way to create after the catch. He can get vertical, and he does a great job of working the middle of the field when they ask him to do so. And then Jaylen Waddle from Alabama, his teammate, who got injured, as I mentioned, he's the most dynamic playmaker in this entire draft with the ball in his hands. Reverses, screens, and also as a vertical receiver. So those three guys, in my opinion, belong in the top 10. We'll see how it all shakes out.
And Waddle, maybe his comp, maybe if things pan out, is Tyreek Hill. I think it's a legitimate question in this NFL. Who would you rather have, Marvin Harrison in his prime or Tyreek Hill? I mean, those are there. That's the upside, but still. But not that long ago, you could find – what's that? Yeah, right. Yeah. No one's complaining. You could find, of course, you could find real game-changing talent later in the draft. We see Pro Bowl and All-Pro caliber talents in the second round, and much later even. Are you saying that's changing? Is it going to be harder? Like, you didn't find guys who could pressure the quarterback from the outside much later in the draft. You had to take those guys early. But is this changing now? Or if you want a game-changing wideout, are you going to have to grab them up high?
I don't know necessarily that you have to in the top 10. There's also depth behind these guys. I mean, anyone who watched Florida football this year, Kadarius Toney is a special playmaker. He's a little bit like a Jaylen Waddle, where he's not your traditional, you know, X wide receiver on the perimeter. You can play him outside. You can move him in the slot. You can move him in the backfield. He's just an offensive weapon. And he creates a lot of plays just with the ball in his hands. Rashad Bateman from Minnesota is probably going to be a second-round pick. Reminds me a lot of Juju Smith-Schuster for Pittsburgh. He's going to come in. He's going to run a 4.56. Everyone's going to say, he doesn't have the speed. He doesn't have the traits. But he's going to be ready to go. He's a big, sturdy, physical receiver who goes up and makes plays when the ball's in the air. So there are a lot of really good wide receivers in this class. Certainly, you want to get one of the top three we talked about with Chase, Smith, and Waddle. But if you don't, there are plenty of guys to get late in the first and into the second and third rounds.
All right, Todd, you touched on this just a little bit earlier, but I want to go back to it because you have the Panthers trading up for Trey Lance. Why would they draft him over Justin Fields?
Well, first of all, talking to Matt Rhule and the Carolina defensive coordinator and another assistant coach, they all reiterated the same point. We lost 8 games by one score last year. We feel like we have a roster that is playoff ready if we have the quarterback that can lead that drive in the fourth quarter. And so they had Mac Jones at the Senior Bowl all week, and I think they really liked him. And how could you not like what you saw from him during practice during those 3 days in Mobile, Alabama? But I think Trey Lance and also Justin Fields, they provide a little bit more in terms of extending plays and just being playmakers. And I went with Lance slightly ahead of Fields. And everyone's yelling at me, like you talked about with social media, saying, well, how could you put Lance ahead of Fields? Yeah. And you know, you're down on Fields. It's not the case. They have identical grades. Fields is going 4 overall. So we're talking about a top 5 pick. But I just think Lance, they have very similar skill sets in terms of being big, sturdy, strong arm quarterbacks that are mobile and can create after the initial play breaks down. But I think Lance is able to process a little bit quicker. He didn't play this past year, just the one game. It wasn't an opt-out. It was because it was at the FCS level. But if you go back and study the 2019 tape of him, he's got a chance to be special. He just needs some time to develop and the right coaching staff and the right situation around him. But I think Lance and Fields are, as I said, kind of that third tier of quarterbacks behind Lawrence and Wilson. But they're not going to last on the board very long. I'll be surprised if either of them are available past pick 10.
Todd, I understand why Jacksonville would say, all right, we have Trevor Lawrence and you know, Deshaun Watson's available, but same program. If anything, Trevor Lawrence looked even better earlier in his college career than Deshaun Watson. We have him on a rookie deal. Deshaun Watson making $160 million. We're good. But is there any other team drafting in the first round where they wouldn't offer that quarterback, like the quarterback, Zach Wilson or whomever, Justin Fields, is such a sure thing that they wouldn't be better off offering that plus stuff in a trade for Deshaun Watson?
How much is it going to cost, Max? I mean, that's the whole thing. It really is. And, you know, the Jets are sitting there at number two. They have two first-rounders this year. They have additional third-round picks this year and next year. They have two first-rounders next year. They have more draft capital this year and next year than any other organization in the league. And there's a really good chance they wind up moving Sam Darnold. And maybe that could be part of the solution in terms of getting a trade done with Houston, is being able to send a viable quarterback prospect and player and a guy who can be really good if he has the pieces around him, which he has not had with the Jets. So I think that the Jets have the best opportunity in terms of draft capital and the situation, but I don't know that they're willing to give up three first-rounders and Sam Darnold. You know, they've built to get here so they can build their own roster. Are they going to give up all of that to bring in Deshaun and then basically lose your first-round picks this year and next year? It's going to be interesting to see. The draft really starts at number two with the New York Jets and their decision.
Can I offer
Todd, you got
Houston
some bold predictions,
the 11th
obviously.
Pick in Daniel Jones, perhaps?
Daniel Jones is
sure,
interesting.
Sure, Max. Yeah, Todd, add that to your mock draft.
Listen, Daniel Jones could get moved. You never know. I mean, Daniel Jones is interesting. What happens with Dak Prescott in Dallas? Jimmy Garoppolo in San Francisco? The Bears need a quarterback. They're sitting at 20. The Colts need a quarterback. They're at 21. Both talking to the Eagles about Carson Wentz. So there are so many dominoes that have to fall between now and the draft. And then we'll start to see a clearer picture of where these quarterbacks in the draft could wind up going. But there's going to be so much movement between now and late April that it's hard to project, because we just don't know who the starting quarterbacks of these 32 NFL teams are going to be.